Good morning, everybody. I'm Asia, and I will be talking about our work done with Trajan and Herbert on protecting legacy C binaries from memory corruption attacks. So did you ever wonder which is the most popular programming language in the world? The winner is C. So this graph shows combined normalized results from multiple data sets, including Yahoo Search, Google Code, and FreshMeat, and C occupies the top line. So because this programming language happens to be vulnerable to buffer overflow attacks, multiple defensive mechanisms were developed and applied in real-world scenarios, including canaries, non-execution prevention, and address space randomization. However, despite all these defense mechanisms, buffer overflows still rank third in the SWE SAN's top 25 most dangerous programming errors. So clearly, the problem of buffer overflows is of a primary importance. And because of that, in the recent years, there has been lots of research which aims to prevent buffer overflows. However, lots of those projects do this at the source code level, which means that even though they are great and have very low performance, they leave all the legacy binaries at the mercy of attackers. So we seek for a solution which doesn't require an access to the source code, doesn't require symbol tables, and doesn't require us to recompile the program. One of the very few protection mechanisms which can be applied to existing binaries is dynamic taint analysis. I'm sure lots of you are already familiar with the technique, so I will only very briefly introduce it. In a nutshell, it tracks the propagation of data coming from a suspicious source, such as network, and then it checks when this data is used in an illegal way. For instance, if the program counter is loaded with a data coming from the network, it's something suspicious, and dynamic taint analysis raises an alert. So this technique is very effective at detecting control flow diverting attacks. However, it doesn't come without its shortcomings. So first of all, it's usually very slow. Then it detects a manifestation of the attack and not the attack itself, which might have happened thousands of cycles before. And it cannot offer any prevention against non-control flow diverting attacks. So think of a buffer overflow which alters a server configuration string or a user privilege level. It's all very serious stuff, and dynamic taint analysis cannot offer us anything here. So we need more. In our work, we propose BinArmor, which is a body armor for binaries. So it protects existing binaries from both control flow and non-control flow diverting attacks. It doesn't require an access to the source code or the original symbol tables. In general, BinArmor is based on dynamic analysis, which means that we cannot guarantee no false negatives. It sort of works like a real armor. It cannot provide full protection, but it proves to be very useful in practice, and we managed to detect all the Linux attacks we had and tried. So in a nutshell, BinArmor hardens a binary in three steps. First, we extract data structures, which are arrays in our case, which require protection. Then we again dynamically find potentially unsafe pointer accesses to those buffers. And finally, we statically rewrite the binary so that we get a completely new binary which can be run natively. And we insert some instrumentation to this binary, which makes sure that pointers which were once assigned to a buffer, because each buffer gets a color, never access memory of a different color. And now I will go through these steps in some more detail. So as I said, in the first step, we need to extract data structures, which are arrays in our case, which might require protection, which are potentially vulnerable to buffer overflows attacks. So if symbol tables are possible, it's trivial, but usually they are not. And in this case, we use Howard, which is a reverse engineering tool we presented at NDSS last year. And Howard performs dynamic analysis to detect buffers in a binary. It does it by observing memory access patterns. But I will not go into any more details now about Howard. Just please refer to our paper. In the second step of the whole BinArmor procedure, we dynamically find potentially unsafe accesses to those buffers, to those arrays. So what we do, we run the binary multiple times with various inputs, and we dump all instructions which access the buffers we have seen in the previous steps. And those are the instructions which will protect an instrument in the last step of the whole binomial procedure. So observe that this analysis is done dynamically, which means that if we do not exercise the program well enough, then we might miss some of the array accesses, and then they will not be instrumented in the last step of the binomial procedure. And this is exactly where the potential false negatives I have mentioned before come from. Oh, sorry, it's not complete. Finally, in the last step of the whole binomial procedure, we statically rewrite the binary. So as I have said already, we get a completely new binary which we can run natively. We do it by inserting some instrumentation to the x86 binary. And the whole idea is that each buffer gets a color, a unique color. And then once a pointer is assigned to this buffer, it gets exactly the same color. So we have green pointers accessing green buffers. And then we instrument each and every instruction we have found in the previous step to make sure that once a pointer is assigned to green buffer, it would never access yellow memory. If it happens, then there is something wrong going on. So this basic policy prevents both control and non-control flow diverting attacks because we only look when a buffer is overflown. And also the detection happens exactly at the moment of the overflow and not somewhere later. So in general, BinArmor can operate in two modes. The first one is known as objects mode. It's very similar to WIT and BBC if you are familiar with those. So in objects mode, the protection is limited to single objects, like single structures, single arrays. So we do not detect buffer overflows which are inside a data structure. And the second mode, which is field mode, is much more fine-grained, and we protect individual fields inside structures. So in the first case, if only the size of a buffer is not underestimated, we guarantee zero false positives. And in the second one, as we'll later see, due to incomplete code coverage, theoretically false positives can happen in some very rare corner cases. We discuss it in details in paper, but we never encounter them in practice. We just cannot guarantee anything here. So since in our opinion, the second mode is somewhat more interesting, in the remaining part of my presentation, I will focus on this one. So as we have already seen, the basic idea behind our approach is that pointers and buffers get colors, and we insert instrumentation which makes sure that they match each other. So in this case, we have an array which is red, and it's accessed in this little program. In fact, we are working at the level of x86 instructions. I just have normal source code here for you for simplicity. So this array is accessed in this while loop using the p pointer, and we will insert instrumentation in those blank lines. So first, when pointer is assigned to the buffer, the pointer becomes red. And next, we instrument each and every instruction which dereference this pointer to make sure that we remain in the red memory region. So if the stop condition is invalid and the program tries to access white memory, it's illegal, we stop it. So in this example, you can see that the whole array is given a single color, which is red. However, as we will see now, if we are to provide protection at the level of fields inside structures, the coloring scheme needs to be much more sophisticated. To illustrate it, consider a data structure, MyStruct, which consists of H, buffer, which is an array of structs, and the privileged field. Say that this data structure is mapped somewhere in memory. For now, we give it just one single color, which is blue. And we will observe some pointer accesses without this data structure to see what we can expect and what we need to improve. So first, say that we have a pointer which points to the bottom part of the buffer buff, the offset 4, and to use this pointer to access the X field at offset 12. In this case, memory is blue, the pointer is blue, the colors match, the access is granted. Similarly, if we use exactly the same pointer to access the Y field, again, both colors are blue, and the access is again granted, it's fine. However, when our program has a bug, and it tries to use a pointer which points somewhere inside the buffer, so inside the array buff, in this case we have it pointing to a field at the offset 12, and this pointer is used to access the privileged field which is outside the buffer. In this case, both are blue again, so we cannot say that this access should not be granted, and this is something we'll need to fix. Also, programs usually do not use a pointer pointing to the Y field to access the X field in the next array element. So normally this is an access which we do not want to allow either. So you can see that using this flat coloring scheme, everything is blue, and we cannot say which access should be granted and which access should be not, so we need to extend it. And in order to do this, we'll exploit all the information we have about the data structure. So observe that the data structure is in fact not flat, but it has an inherent hierarchy inside. So structure has three fields, age, buffer, and privileged. Then buffer can be further divided into elements, and each of the elements has two fields. So what we do in BeanArmor is that we give each and every field a separate color. So some of the fields are blank now, the bottom ones. I will come back to this in a moment. But other than that, buffer becomes light green, the privileged field becomes turquoise, elements of the array are dark gray and light blue, and so on. And now, the color of a memory location is not just blue or red anymore, but now it's a sequence of all those color components. So for instance, the color of the memory location at offset 4 has two components. The first one is blue, which reflects structure, and the next one is light green, which reflects buffer in the structure. Similarly, the color of the memory location at offset 16 has four color segments, blue, which represents structure, light green represents buffer, dark gray represents an element in this buffer, and so on. So now we have much more complex coloring scheme, and when we want to grant pointers access to memory, we again need to check colors. However, now we require that the colors of each and every element from left to right are exactly the same, with all those blank fields serving as wildcards. So to illustrate it, let's consider a few of the pointer accesses we have seen before. First, say that we have this pointer pointing to the bottom of the buffer being used to access the field at offset 12. So now the pointer has colors blue, green, blank, blank. The memory location has colors blue, green, dark gray, blank. So all the colors match, the access is granted. However, when our program has a bug, as before, and it tries to use a pointer pointing inside the buffer to access the privileged field, then the second component doesn't match. We have green versus turquoise, so this access is not granted. So to wrap up this slide, it's important to remember that all data structures have a hierarchy, and we map the same hierarchy to our colors, and then the colors of each and memory location is a sequence of colors which represent subsequent levels in the hierarchy of a data structure. So you can see that using this more complex coloring scheme, we can protect individual fields inside structures. However, we are not done yet, because it's very possible that there is some legal code which is, we say, colorblind. It means it does not comply with the hierarchy of the data structure, and so it also does not comply with with our coloring scheme. And if we do not handle it properly, we could get false positives. So consider this for loop in the bottom part of the slide. It just initializes the green buffer. And in order to do this, it takes a pointer to the bottom part of the buffer. And then it uses this pointer to derive pointers to the following elements of this buffer. And then we sort of get a chain of pointers jumping over the green buffer. So you can see that this loop is certainly not so much interested in the elements of the buffer or the X and Y fields. The loop treats the buffer as if it was completely flat, like an array of 4-byte fields. It's like a casting, really. So for this reason, when this loop tries to use a pointer pointing to the field at offset 16 to access the field at offset 20, the third color components would not match. And if we do not handle the skies correctly, would cause a false alert. Just a second. So luckily, we have a very good solution to this problem. So remember that in the second phase of the whole dynamic procedure, of the whole BinArmor procedure, we dump all instructions which are potentially unsafe, which are potentially interesting, and which should be instrumented in this phase of the BinArmor procedure. So already then, we can see that this pointer dereference instruction is not really interested, so that this pointer instruction treats the green buffer as if it was completely flat, and it's in fact not interested in the last two columns of our data structure. So what we do, we just let this very instruction, only this one, to mask the last two columns of our coloring scheme. And then this instruction would see the buffer as having only two colors, blue and green, which means that all those accesses which are inside data structure would be allowed because they would only always compare blue and green against blue and green. However, when our program has a bug again and it wants to use a pointer pointing inside the buffer to access the privileged field, then the second color component doesn't match and we raise an alert, so we have saved the privileged field correctly. I must say that there are much more technicalities between all the masking and shadows and so on, but I will not go into them right now because it will take us another few hours. So please refer to the paper, and I will move to the evaluation of our system. So first of all, performance. To evaluate performance, we just compare the runtime of a vanilla version of the application, which is native and blue, against the instrumented version of the application. In this slide, we have seen some of the real-world common programs, including wget, gzip for various input sizes, and lighty for various request sizes. So we can see that the slowdown here is always smaller than 2 times. I must say that those results are slightly better than the results we have in the paper. And we can see that for the IO-intensive wget, performance is almost negligible. To see the worst case scenarios of wget, of BinArmor, we also ran the nBench benchmarking suite. And here we can see that the average slowdown is 2.7. And we hit 5 times and 4.2 for the integer sort application and LU decomposition. So this is not low, but perhaps it's a price we have to pay if we want to protect binaries and we do not have the access to the source code, we cannot recompile. But we have some ideas for improvement, and we hope to implement them in the future, so we hope we will be able to decrease those slowdowns, at least to some extent. Next come effectiveness. So as I said, in BinArmor, we cannot guarantee no false negatives because all analysis is done dynamically. But in our opinion, BinArmor proves to be very useful in practice because we managed to detect all Linux buffer overflows we had. And The list includes Stack Overflows and heap overflows, including the attack on the Exim mail server, which is a non-controlled data attack, which would not be detected with, for instance, dynamic taint analysis. So our armor proved effective here. And finally, I will conclude my talk. So I have briefly discussed BinArmor, which is a system which protects binaries against control and non-control flow diverting attacks. It doesn't require an access to the source code or symbol tables. In the more fine-grained mode, we cannot guarantee no false positives due to problems with code coverage, but we never encounter them in practice. And as we discuss in the paper, it's really a corner case which is possible, but not often at all. And the current performance overhead is pretty high, 2.7 on the end bench benchmarking suite, but we hope to optimize it in future. I will be happy to take questions now. I have 10 minutes.
Hi, I'm Bill Cheswick. This is nice work.
Thank you.
Have you discovered any new bugs that we don't know about? Haven't seen
oh,
before?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Good.
So one of the bugs in HTGET, mm-hmm. We just found it. And so it doesn't have the SVE number because right. It wasn't found before.
Well done.
Thank you. Any more questions?
Right, so Andreas Hevelin, University of Pennsylvania. So in the paper you say that the attackers tend to adapt to our defenses. And so mm-hmm. My question is, if you were attacking a system that was protected in this way, mm-hmm. what would be your best shot? How would you attack it?
I wouldn't. No, so I would say that what we do in BinArmor, we sort of look for overflows which are inside. So we really look when a buffer is overflown. So you could exploit the system in the sense that if our dynamic analysis is not very accurate, so I would certainly look for instructions which so if I were an attacker, I would look for instructions which are very difficult to be covered using code coverage, because we use code coverage, so we run the program multiple times with various inputs. And if the attacker can find a path which is extremely difficult to get, then it will be perhaps the best shot. But on the other hand, we are also intending to improve BinArmor with static analysis, with sort of like a concolic execution, where you have a dynamically found path in your program, and then would like to extend it left and right using static analysis just to improve coverage. So in this case, the attacker will have to do even a better job.
Hi, Larry Stewart. How do you handle subroutines like memcopy, where the pointer comes through several levels of procedure call before it gets used?
I'm not sure I understand the question. So you're saying we have a memcopy?
It's a general purpose subroutine that, mm-hmm. that copies memory from one place to another, mm-hmm. but the pointer has a color somewhere in the user program, but mm-hmm. then is called through some long chain before it is used.
Yes, absolutely. So in general, I have said that we only instrument pointer dereference application, which is not true, because we also have to instrument the whole information. We also have to instrument lots of instruction which track pointers. So we would first find the instruction which initialize the pointer, then register holding this pointer, say, becomes green. And when this register is copied somewhere else, then the new destination becomes green as well. So we have to keep track of the color of the pointer while the program executes.
Okay, Julia Lowell, INRIA, do you, at the moment, any optimization at all?
Not yet.
Okay. I think there's a number of optimizations that have been thought of in the context of Java, where you also want to do array bounds checks. Do you think those would be, could you get enough information from the binary code to be able to do those kinds of optimizations?
So in general, there are lots of optimizations which we could do. Some of them were proposed in WIT, and we think that some of them could be also ported to binaries. And also at this year at NDSS, there is a paper by people from Columbia where they propose how to optimize dynamic chain tracking in general, when you can do copy propagation, that code elimination, make sure that if you have multiple instrumentation instructions, gather them together so that you have less problems restoring registers. So we think that there is room for improvement. We just didn't have a chance to try it yet.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Костя Серебряный, Google Moscow. Thanks for the great work. I have a second question about memcopy. Some of the functions in libc, like memcopy, strlen, memcmp, tend to read more bytes than it is actually allowed by the standard. Suppose we have a buffer of 6 bytes, mm-hmm. and the second buffer of six bytes, mm-hmm. and we do memcmp. Mm-hmm. It will still read 8 bytes mm-hmm. Up to the alignment. What do you do with this?
So in the current implementation, the granularity of colors is 4 bytes, so each 4 bytes get a color. So in this case, when there are 2 bytes which are never used by the program, it's fine. One more? We have a few more minutes.
Stefan Plotner from Amherst College. Have you applied bin armored against the Linux kernel itself?
No.